If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
I remember when Fallout 1 came out, I was in college, I played it, and I just, like, I loved it so much. I skipped a bunch of classes to play through the whole game, and then I played, and then I found out I went online and I saw that there was an evil ending, and so I went back, and I didn't replay the game, but I went and went back to my last save, and I killed, like, every innocent person I could find on the map to get the evil ending as well, and then I love Fallout 2, bugs and all. And then I played Baldur's Gate. That was the last game, even though that was BioWare, but it was published through Black Isle. So I played all those games. And I mean, like, I didn't really understand how the game industry worked or anything like that. But the idea of working for the studio that was associated with these games, I was just, you know, oh my God, I can't believe it. And it was before Torment came out. And it wasn't until I got the job that I found out, like, oh, I'm going to be doing this for Torment. I was like, oh, that's awesome. So I was hoping I'd get to work on a D&D game, but even more than that, I was hoping I'd get to work on Fallout 3. So that's why I was like, oh my God, Black Isle.
Sifter.com.au.
Roy from Sifter. I'm here at PAX Australia. We're talking to Josh Sawyer for Lightmap.
Hi, I'm Fiona Bartholomaeus.
And I'm Gianni DiGiovanni.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 24th of May.
Bungie calls it quits on Destiny 2 as the final patch arrives in June with new and old faves.
Sony pushes the price of PlayStation Plus up for new subscribers. Lucky everything else is getting cheaper.
Forza Horizon 6 is racing to the pole position, breaking records for new players of the series.
Plus, we give you a preview of the most interesting games that are releasing this week.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website, sifter.com.au, every Sunday.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/discord.
All right, we're here with Josh Sawyer, the
studio design director and game director.
And game director at Obsidian, a very much fan-loved game company that's made a lot of classics. Your latest game was Pentiment?
Yeah, my latest game was Pentiment. The studio's latest game was Avowed. Well, actually, no, technically, geez, I can't even keep track of them. Grounded 2 went into early access, and then before that was Avowed. And then we have Outer Worlds 2 coming at the end of the month.
Yeah, Outer Worlds 2.
So yeah, lot happening.
So when you started at, it wasn't Obsidian, it was Black Isle Studios. Yeah, you started as a web developer, is that right? Is that something you did?
Yeah.
What year was that?
That was 1999.
1999.
Yeah, 1999. I graduated from Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin. That's in the Midwest in the US. Yeah. I had a degree in history, and I had taught myself web design and Flash animation. Yeah. And a friend of mine very luckily told me, hey, Black Isle Studios is hiring a webmaster. Mm-hmm. And it was at the time where people really liked Flash animation and companies really desperately wanted to hire people that did Flash animation. Yeah. So I applied for the job and I got it. And so my first job in the industry was I moved out to Irvine, California to work for Black Isle. And I designed the website for Planescape Torment.
Of course, Planescape Torment, another fan favorite. Back in those days, Netscape was big. I think I remember being there in the early days. Is that what you were designing on, or was it IE, one of the early versions?
That is actually a really good question. The thing is, they were also different. And so the thing, really what I had to do is I had to design for multiple browsers. Yeah. And there were always compatibility issues. So every time I would design something, I would have to actually run it in all the different browsers to make sure. Because if I didn't, then invariably someone would complain, hey, this is all broken, these tables. Because all the tables were built manually. It was in the early day of what you see is what you get editors. Yeah. So I did everything by manually cutting it up and then writing out Notepad, which is very labor intensive. And also the tables wouldn't always align in every browser. So it was a lot of very dumb, trial and error with that stuff.
Cool. And so when you started, you were a big fan of their games, like Fallout 1 and 2. Was that what was on your radar?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember when Fallout 1 came out, I was in college, I played it, and I just, like, I loved it so much. I skipped a bunch of classes to play through the whole game, and then I played, and then I found out I went online and I saw that there was an evil ending, and so I went back, and I didn't replay the game, but I went and went back to my last save, and I killed, like, every innocent person I could find on the map to get the evil ending as well. And then I love Fallout 2, bugs and all. And then I played Baldur's Gate. That was the last game, even though that was BioWare, but it was published through Black Isle. So I played all those games. And I mean, like, I didn't really understand how the game industry worked or anything like that. But the idea of working for the studio that was associated with these games, I was just, you know, oh my God, I can't believe it. And it was before Torment came out. And it wasn't until I got the job that I found out, like, oh, I'm going to be doing this for Torment. I was like, oh, that's awesome. So I was hoping I'd get to work on a D&D game, but even more than that, I was hoping I'd get to work on Fallout 3. So that's why I was like, oh my God, Black Isle.
and did you work a little bit on that before it?
I did, yeah. So, you know, Chris Avalon was going to be the lead designer on that, and he had this big old design Bible, and there were a bunch of people at the studio that have been talking and dreaming about working on Fallout 3 for years, and yeah, it just didn't work out. I mean, Interplay had a lot of problems, and so the studio started to collapse, and then people left to form Obsidian, and yeah, and then I can't remember at what point that Bethesda bought the license, but at that point, I was kind of like, well, I guess I'm never going to have a chance to work on a Fallout game, so.
And we have a lot of big fans of Fallout New Vegas, which is, so what was it like working on that when, obviously being a fan of the earlier games, and then you got to, you know, take some, were you lead on that in a narrative or design or both?
So I was the lead designer and project director, game director is what we would call it now. But John Gonzalez was the creative lead on it. And we had a mix of new people like John and then other people who had been back at Black Isle before, like Avalon, of course, who contributed to the quest design, character design. And we used a mix of ideas from Van Buren, which was our version of Fallout 3. Some of that sort of recontextualized for the new game that we were making, and then new ideas from new team members or things where we said, like, ah, this doesn't really make as much sense for the game we're trying to make now. So, I mean, it was super exciting because, again, it was like, oh, I didn't think I was ever going to get a chance to do this. So being able to work on it was amazing. And again, I think there was a really nice mix of the Black Isle veterans who had always wanted to take another shot at the setting, and also to do it more on the West Coast. Like, obviously, it's not, like, truly on the coast, but it's more in the region where the first two games took place. And so using Bethesda's tech, but shifting the focus back over to the area that we were more familiar with was really fun.
Yeah. So that's an interesting point you raise about using their tech. Obviously, now you're all under the same house at Microsoft. It does come up a bit. There's been some low-key commentary about, you know, do you get to access the creation engine? Will there be ever a chance of maybe another, like, spin-off, Fallout, New Vegas 2, or something else in that IP? Is that a possibility? Or are you guys kept kind of separate or siloed? We don't really...
Yeah, I mean, there is tech sharing at under the umbrella. Like, for example, OEI Tools, which is the conversation editor that we developed over the past 19 years. We use OEI Tools on all of our projects, and it's a very powerful editor, especially if you're going to do branching dialogue. And there are a number of other teams that we have let use it because it's handy, and it's a lot of work to make it from scratch. But it's always, you know, negotiated on a team by team basis. And as for, like, you know, other collaborations on whether it's tech or IPs, that happens above my head. Yeah. So, yeah.
Fair enough. And there's been a lot of commentary. I mean, there always has been about, like, what is indie? What is AAA? You know, we've got these big games coming out, like GTA 6 that people now starting to call, like, Quad A and stuff. And then obviously you guys are working on, like, worked on Pentiment, which, you know, some people would look and go, okay, that's a sort of a AAA studio making an indie game, a smaller, kind of a better ratio of cost to return kind of like stuff. Are we going to see more stuff like that? And, like, what are your thoughts in general on, like, the industry and how, like, indie and AAA are kind of blending and moving around?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that when people call Pentiment indie, it's kind of like we made it under the protection of a, you know, multi-hundred person team under, like, a huge corporation. So it's not quite the same. And I know a lot of indie devs, and I have enormous respect for them because they make miracles with, like, you know, a fraction of what our teams have, even our small teams have. So, yes, I don't know what you maybe capital 1A. I don't know what you would call it, but there is a difference there. But I guess what I would say is I would like to see larger studios doing, and I was actually really encouraged when, you know, we made Pentiment, and there were a lot of other big studios where people were like, we're going to do that. You know, like that. There's a lot of passion to make, hey, we just want to make a small thing that's not super expensive. It's not 6 years. It's not hundreds of people or thousands of people. And I also think that the market, the audience, the gaming audience is starting to be able to just like find value at price points and game sizes that are not, you know, crazy in outer space. You know, when games are costing people a lot of money and there are things that are available that give a very different experience that are a lot less, like half as much money, if they look at a $30 game or a $40 game and it's awesome and all their friends are playing it, there used to be a stigma, I think, with sort of like games that weren't at the top end of the price tier. But I think that that's changing and people are seeing some of the best games that have come out in the last few years are AA games or they're indie games. And they don't need to be qualified as like, well, they're good for their price. Like, no, they're just amazing games. The fact that they don't cost as much to buy is just a nice benefit. So I'm hopeful because, you know, you can't have half the industry engaged in making quintuple A or whatever games. It's just not sustainable, really. And so I'm hopeful that we're going to see more more exploration of like double A or triple I or all these things that are sort of smaller, more focused games. I think there's an audience for it. I think it's probably more sustainable in the long term, but that's just me.
Yeah. On that note, so some of the fans of like the old school Fallout 1 and 2 and possibly maybe Tactics Brotherhood, the concept of the turn-based kind of tactical strategy game, could that be something that you guys ever look at doing, a smaller version of that? You could potentially do Outer Worlds or something like that, like a spin-off or a smaller game?
Yeah, I mean, that's something actually that people bring up a lot. So whether you call them sort of tactical RPGs or SRPGs, there is a lot of passion at the developer level for them. Making the business case is harder, though, I will say. So the sort of tactical, well, and also depends on how it's packaged, because one could argue, like, you know, obviously Baldur's Gate 3, that is a turn-based combat game, that is also a role-playing game with romance and like choice and consequence and all these other things. But there's a very passionate audience for SRPGs, tactical RPGs. The question is always, how much is a worthwhile amount of money to invest in that before the market is sort of tapped out? But that being said, this is something that comes up every couple of years because I would love to make, for example, a Pillars of Eternity Tactics game, I think would be fantastic to do. But really it's sort of finding out like what's the sort of business case that you can make that's going to match the sort of like passion and the team size that you need. And usually when we start speccing it out, often we're like, ooh, that's a lot of people. Oh, that's a lot of time. Like, can we find the audience to make it worthwhile? But no, there's definitely excitement about the idea of those sorts of games.
On the topic of romance, specifically in CRPGs, I've seen online at various points a bit of commentary on like Obsidian and how you guys handle your romance options and narrative kind of themes. Some people are for or against it. You know, some people want that kind of like they get a variety of NPCs they can romance. And it tends to be that, well, from my experience, that Obsidian takes a bit more of a mature approach to storytelling and doesn't always give those fans what they want. Can you talk about that a bit, if that's even the case? Or what do you think?
Sure, yeah. I mean, obviously, I can't speak for all the developers, but we've had a lot of our developers have given opinions over time. And some of it is the time involved. Doing romance as well, it's a lot of work. I mean, I think even asking the studios where that is sort of their focus, I think they would say it's an enormous amount of work on top of all the other stuff that the companions do. So sometimes we kind of balk at, you know, we budget out how much time it's going to take and we don't think we can do a good job at it. Also, depending on the tone and the style of game, sometimes I personally will feel like I don't think we can make good romances. It's not like an opposition to their existence. It's just, I don't know if we're going to be able to do it. So before Pentiment, and Pentiment doesn't have like RPG style romances, but love and relationships and romances, including involving the player, are a big part of the game, but not in the sense that like an RPG typically has. Okay. Pillars 1 didn't have any romances. Deadfire, it was on a designer-by-designer basis, and basically what I said is, look, you have to budget time for this. And we were trying to be very careful about how much time we spent writing on the companions because it can really balloon, and we'd had problems on the past with them actually being logistically nightmares. So I said, like, if you want to do a romance, that's going to be a big part of the character. You need to actually budget your time for it and be, you know, smart about it. And so there were some romances in Deadfire. People still complained about them. Some people liked them, which I appreciated. But, you know, I think it's the story that's kind of been told over time, because it's easier to sort of distill it down, is Obsidian, and sometimes we further that narrative, Obsidian hates romance, or Obsidian doesn't want to do romance. And I think it's more that it is not typically the wheelhouse we have operated in. I certainly think there are studios that have a lot more experience doing it. Obviously, I've done romance in the last two games that I've worked on. But I, you know, I think it's something that I'm personally approaching with a very measured sort of, like, let's see what we can do. And we have to make sure that we can do it well by our own standards and by the standards of the audience. And if it's not firing on both of those, then it's not going to be worth doing.
Yeah. There's a lot of those games do have tropes in them where, and it does seem like the focus is very much on you as the player, and all the NPCs are just available for you rather mm-hmm. than being people on their own merits mm-hmm. and being able to, like, reject the player, which is always sure. a bit of a weird thing. Like mm-hmm. you're playing a game and you expect it to entertain you, but then if your NPC, you know, partner breaks up with you, that's obviously...
Yeah. It's difficult, because I think that there's a wide, understandably a wide set of tastes and preferences for how romances are handled. You know, people will talk about player sexual, you know, like, everyone is available to romance, but then if you don't do that, some members of the audience will get really upset, or they'll view it as a bias or a sense of artifice. And the thing is, like, we're designing all of it. So, you know, like, it's all under our control. We just have to figure out what sort of experience are we trying to create. And, you know, for example, I do think that if you have circumstances where the, let's say, rejection comes out of nowhere, it can be really off-putting and upsetting. And if that's the effect that you're trying to create, okay, like, that's valid. I mean, maybe the player is going to be so pissed off and you're fine with that. But if that's not what you're trying to create, then maybe you should think about, how can I forecast this in a way where they understand that nothing's going to happen here? I don't know. It's just very complicated, because I think the thing is, you know, romance and relationships, these are very sensitive things.
Yeah.
Like, more so that, like, when we talk about very high-minded things like, you know, class struggle and things like that, it's less intimate and they're very important. But yeah, when it's about your individual relationship with someone, when it goes wrong, it just feels so bad, even in a fictional context. So that's usually the thing where I say, like, I would love to explore doing this if we have the time and space to make sure that it's done right on our terms and also on the terms of the players.
Maybe you should target the Dark Souls players as an audience, because yeah, they're tough and they're used to rejection. So it might be an angle there. Maybe. So cool. So just to finish up, what are the games you're looking forward to? Obviously, you probably can't tell us about stuff you're working on that's coming out, understand.
Sure.
But, like, is there any games that you're looking, are you allowed to say if they're outside Microsoft or not? I don't know.
Sure, yeah. I mean, so I just actually started catching up on Hades. Like, so I knew for a long time that people said Hades was amazing. And I saw it and it looked cool. And so now finally I'm playing Hades so that I can play Hades 2. Very excited about that. And I've been traveling so much that I have not been able to see even a single second of Ghost of Yote. And I pretty much did almost everything in Tsushima just before I left for my sabbatical, and I loved it. So I'm like, I need to Yote. Like, I need Ghost of Yote. So those are the two ones I'm really looking forward to playing.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you very much for talking to us and coming to Australia. And we hope to have you back again next time if you're available and up for it.
Thank you very much. Love being.
Hi, Kyle Paletto here from Drop Rate, Sifter's video game review podcast. Tomodachi Life returns with Living the Dream, a life sim with endless possibilities, like making Chapel Roan date the Loch Ness Monster.
So the concept of the game is that you've got an island of Miis, like the little Nintendo avatars. You're supposed to teach them about the people that you've based them off of. So then you get all of these really fun moments when they actually do the things that these people would or wouldn't do. Sabrina Carpenter fell in love with Mothman. Chapel Roan is in love with the Loch Ness Monster.
Checks out.
Gianni's in love with Sailor Moon.
That really checks out, actually. Find out more on Drop Rate. Available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Here.
You're listening to Lightmap, interesting conversations with video game creators.
Thanks for listening. That was Lightmap. I'm Royden Wagner, and go and check out more at sifter.com.au.